Bé, bon dia, benvinguts i benvingudes. Alguns de vosaltres potser ja coneixiu l'espai, coneixiu la institució. Si no, us permetreu doncs, 2 minuts per poder-vos explicar. Esteu a la seu de DipSalut. DipSalut és un organisme autònom de la Diputació de Girona que la nostra missió és donar suport als ajuntaments en les seves polítiques de salut, que bàsicament són les seves competències, una part que són competències municipals, tan pragmàtiques com tot el que és la gestió sanitària dels espais públics municipals, el control sanitari, i després hi ha un altre aspecte molt important que també hem endegat, que són tot el tema de polítiques de salut, de promoció de la salut des del municipi. Per tant, doncs bé, hi ha una informació que després us la podem donar, que és el catàleg, alguns veig que ja el teniu a la carpeta, i que aquest catàleg els ajuntaments van demanant, i que va des de temes d'exposicions, o des dels itineraris i els parcs de salut, o el tema del territori que ha de protegir, etc. I per tant, des d'aquest sentit, el nostre client, per dir-ho així, i la nostra obligació són els municipis, que sabeu que les diputacions estem per donar suport als municipis. És un organisme de nova creació, i per tant doncs, aquest any 2010 és el que ja estem posant en marxa doncs, totes aquestes polítiques. Formalment es va crear el mitjans del 2007, per tant portem 2 anys i mig, encara no ben bé, doncs, de funcionament, i per tant doncs, ha dissenyat tots aquests programes tenint en compte les obligacions municipals per una banda i sobretot les orientacions de l'Organització Mundial de la Salut en el sentit de dir tenim un problema, el problema es diu, per exemple, per simplificar, vostès en saben molt més que jo, es diu obesitat, bàsicament, es diu sedentarisme, es diu una sobrealimentació dels països rics, doncs intentar nosaltres, per la via municipal, ajudar, posar el nostre gra de sorra, perquè des del municipi se sigui actiu per ajudar amb polítiques que millorin aquestes situacions. No? I aquest és el nostre... El que també és important dir és que des del primer moment, des de la nostra implantació, doncs, hem volgut sempre aliança amb aquells que en saben. I, per exemple, doncs, avui mateix, aquest acte que estem aquí, organitzat per la Càtedra de Promoció de la Salut de l'UDG, us haig de dir que les primeres persones que vaig tenir sentades al despatx, quan encara jo no sabia ben bé què era això del DipSalut, ja actuava com a president, però no sabia el que era, sabeu que a nivell polític a vegades et diuen tu has de portar aquesta responsabilitat, i vaig dir, a veure, era on t'estic situat, que te'n situes. Els primers que em van situar van ser aquelles dues persones que em van venir a veure en el meu petit despatx de la Diputació, i m'han dit, escolta, estem engegant aquest projecte, volem engegar això, i des del primer moment vam veure clars que Universitat i Diputació havíem d'anar també conjuntament. Que no n'hi ha prou de posar-hi calés a les coses, sinó ser capaços d'avançar una mica, mirar més lluny, no? I ser capaços d'avaluar aquelles coses que fem per millorar-les. No? I aquí la Càtedra, el suport que ens dona en aquest sentit és, doncs, evidentment, molt important perquè dona doncs, la categoria científica a temes o a resolucions diguem-ne molt casolanes, no? I per tant doncs encantats, no m'allargo més, encantats que estigueu aquí, esperem que això doncs en traiem profit, que estem segurs, hem tingut una petita conversa amb el professor i la veritat és que a mi em serveix un profà, jo soc professor de tecnologia, seus que no, els meus pacients són les màquines, I per tant em sembla més els veterinaris, que els pacients no obren la boca, més que el ser humà almenys explicar alguna cosa normalment, no? Però a mi em serveix quan parlem amb persones que fa molt temps que esteu treballant i reflexionant sobre aquest tema, em dona, m'ajuda perquè veig que no anem massa desencaminats amb les coses que fem. I per tant dius, bueno, doncs ja anem bé, perquè si no podria dir, ostres, estem a les antípodes del que realment serà. Per tant, va bé aquestes trobades, per saber si les nostres polítiques que estem fent les estem fent en el camí que tothom va per poder anar sumant camí i fer el camí més ample, més potent i evidentment més efectiu. No? Per tant, doncs, moltes gràcies a la casa per comptar doncs, amb nosaltres en aquest acte i a tots vosaltres per estar aquí. Estem a la vostra disposició per qualsevol tema doncs, que us interessi a través de la Dolors o a través de la directa. Moltes gràcies.
Bé, doncs, bon dia. Doncs, en nom de la càtedra, agrair la presència de tots i totes vosaltres en aquesta activitat, en aquesta conferència que hem preparat doncs, amb molta il·lusió. I abans també doncs, agrair la confiança que ens va donar, com ha explicat el president, doncs, de la proposta que li vam anar a fer, la Carme i jo, doncs, quan ell just arrencava. No? I realment vull dir que sí que ens ha confirmat és que la proposta era seriosa i la sinergia va ser doncs, des del primer moment. I bé, doncs, portem un any doncs, ja treballant i pensem doncs, que activitats com aquestes s'iran reproduint periòdicament. Seria del nostre grat, com a mínim, tenir un cop al mes alguna trobada amb temes relacionats amb la salut, però no amb la malaltia, perquè aquesta és la nostra visió i el que volem ajudar a repensar els professionals de la salut i altres persones que sense ser-ho doncs, estan relacionades. No? D'aquí ve que la primera conferència així oberta que fem doncs estigui relacionada també amb un tema que sobte d'entrada, no? O de la salut de genesi, com generar salut, en lloc de dir com prevenir malalties, és una tampoc. I pensem doncs, que per començar doncs, ens ajudarà a repensar una mica doncs, des d'una òptica diferent. La finalitat sempre és millorar la salut i la qualitat de vida de les persones, però ens ajudarà, entenc jo, l'exposició que veurem, doncs tenir un altre punt de vista, més positiu, i treballant bàsicament amb els recursos de les persones, que això és el que intenta la visió de la promoció de la salut. Llavors, per fer això, hem unit aliança doncs, amb la part acadèmica de la universitat, del màster en promoció de la salut, i a la part de difusió, doncs, des de la casa, que és l'encàrrec que tenim i que assumim amb molt de gust. Llavors, per tant, el professor està aquí invitat doncs, com a professor visitant del màster, reconegut i avalat pel Ministeri d'Educació, i llavors doncs, hem fet aquesta activitat oberta per poder socialitzar amb les persones que tinguin interès, com és el cas de tots vosaltres. Llavors, esperem doncs, que gaudim d'aquesta reflexió que farem amb el professor Lindström, que ha vingut doncs, de Finlàndia, bueno, de fet des de Londres, tot i que treballa a Finlàndia, és director del Centre d'Investigació en Promoció de la Salut, i és la persona que està liderant en aquests moments a nivell europeu i a nivell mundial, diria, no m'equivoco, doncs, tot el treball que va iniciar doncs, a la professora Antonovski doncs, fa quasi 25 anys. Pensem doncs, que ens ajudarà a disfrutar. Tenim el suport de la nostra secretària, la Violeta, que ens ajudarà doncs, amb la traducció. Llavors, per tant, recordem que qualsevol intervenció que fem, perquè ella ens senti i pugui traslladar, doncs necessitem fer-ho amb micròfon. Llavors, per tant, hem d'interactuar doncs, ajudats de la màquina. Doncs, comencem. Gràcies, professor Cristo. Podem començar.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for letting me come here, and is there something wrong with the sound? Okay, I thought it was on, okay. Is it better now? Is it there now? Oh yeah, okay, yeah, respond there. Okay. It is the first time I'm in Girona, but I have been in Spain working with Valencia. I came to Spain to work with Valencia in 86 and they developed health promotion there also. I have put this text from you can hear, okay. You just Okay, there's an echo here also. But I put this text here. It's from Alice in Wonderland. And it's actually telling us, if you don't know where you go, it doesn't matter where you go. Because, shall I wait? Or, because many times when we work with health, we actually don't think about health. The director here told me his background is not medical and health. He's an engineer, technician, and he says he knows nothing about health. And in fact, he knows a lot about health. But I'm a pediatrician. As a doctor, we always say we know everything, but we know nothing about that, really. If somebody knows nothing about that, it's medicine. I think you said something about my background, but I see I've got the screen here. You come here. This is me. And and my background at this age, you know, it's like I do so many things. I've been a clinician for a long time. I've been in public health for a quarter of a century, 25 years, more than that even. And then doing public health for children first, and then in fact, I think I should tell you a story. I was sitting as a pediatrician in a hospital with a patient who, in principle, she had a chronic disease, cystic fibrosis. In principle, she was dead. And I sat there with the diagnosis. She knew it. She had been ill for all her life. And the new thing, she had an infection in her lungs, and she would die from this infection. I could do nothing. And I sit and wait for this 17-year-old girl who comes into the room, and I expect to see this dead person coming in. And there comes a smiling person at me, and I looked at her and said, "Hey, Veronica, what's up? You look so happy." She said, "I have found a new boyfriend. I'm in love. I want to get married. I want to have children." The starting point was this. And impressions like this so many times showed me that the way I think about health as a doctor is not the right way of thinking. So, to make a long story short, I left the clinical work at the university and went into research. And because I felt health is, in principle, a dead concept, because it's so much infected by disease, I did my research on quality of life. Because when I say health, I would hope that people would think about how it is wonderful to live and so on. But usually they think about disease. You don't have to talk long before they think about disease. But then the other thing is that we as doctors and health professionals sit there, we own the concept. If somebody tries to say something about health. I know in Finland, I did like this, we had this policy. If there was a person who came as a patient and said they knew something about health, we started to talk in medical Latin in order to show that you don't know nothing. Yeah. But when I say quality of life, I guess your first association is not disease and death. It's a different association. And that is the kind of association you should have when you work with them, this sort of something else. What makes life worth living? I challenged WHO with a new definition of health. It's very short. Health is what it takes to make life worth living. Think about that. Health is what it takes to make life worth living. The important thing is how to live, enjoy life, how to thrive in life. And health should be the mechanism that leads to the opportunity to do this. That's the way I think. And This is what sort of what I started thinking. I had one plan for this lecture, but then I talked to the director, and then I thought I have to start this way. Because you said, you know nothing about health, and I have an idea you know a lot about. The other thing you were saying, that you are doing a lot of things about eating. It's a problem in Spain, it's a problem in any country in the Western world, that people eat too much and get too big. But so we do a lot about food and eating on many, many levels. And I have learned one thing. If you want to have people interested in what you're doing, you have to understand the way they think about that thing. So if I'm going, I have been working with schools and school health promotion many years also. And if I go into a school and start talking about nutrition, food, how do I introduce this thing? I thought of giving you an impression of what I would like young people to associate to when I talk about food. Let's see if this thing works now. They take a while. Sometimes they get blocked, these things. Being sound here. You may say anything about this movie. It's raw, it's oversexed, and it's a bit crazy. It's made by the child ombudsman in Norway some time ago. He was inspired by Michael Jackson's Thriller when it was new, and he thought he would do something that would make young people interested in food, making their own sort of good bread for food. The message when you see this picture is in fact, you can think about what it actually says, but what on the other hand, what it says, what do young people do today? Yeah, they listen to music, and not only music, they are also very interested in pictures, in videos. So video and music is one thing that young people do, and we as professionals, teachers and so on, have actually very little experience in using media and using music and so on. So when we go in and talk about cholesterol and blah, 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 children just fall asleep. They never listen to you. And we always think We have to give them fact, fact, fact. But, and of course, usually it's not a problem about people not having information. You can go on the net and you can have everything about cholesterol and everything. But the problem is that to make people interesting in issues, and also making people sort of, you as a professional, have to talk on their arena, where they are. For instance, I always say, if I go into a classroom and or meet a person and say, what is health to you? And he says, a shoe, zapata. I, you know, many times people start laughing when a child says, health is zapata. But in fact, my job as a good health professional, as a good health promoter, is to take that question and that answer and start to understand how this person understands health. Then I'm on the right track. Not as I would do many times as a doctor. I know what health is. And in fact, I know very little about health. I did know, but I was curious. I went out of the hospital. I went to study and I went on. And on this strong trip now, where I'm especially happy today that I am running the global working group on salutogenesis in the world. And we sit with really, really strange results. Lucina, I can take this picture. What does health promotion want to do, really? Now I have to take my salutogenic glasses on, like this. Okay. We are, in fact, thinking about people being born to this world. This is a little child starting off in life, sort of lying here, waiting for life. Life is sort of somewhere over here. And we know there's a journey through life. And we would like to make this trip a good trip so that health would be better, better, better all the time. This is what health promotion wants to do, that you would improve all the time. And today I sit with a model called the salutogenic model, which in fact is telling you this. If you do and act according to this, people will, through life, have well-being, feel good. They will have a good quality of life. They will have good mental health, a very problematic area. And when they go through life, they will tend to choose positive health behavior. I use that term. I don't like the term, but positive health behavior. Choose constructive health behavior. If they get ill, they will manage better than the ordinary. If they get a chronic disease, they will manage better. And if they have encounter a difficult situation in life, like which has a lot of stress, they will do better than the average. So, and on top of all, they will live longer than other people. And what we can see also, if people learn to live in a salutogenic way, the sort of, they get better and better at it throughout life. So, in fact, what I think is, we should start somewhere here in childhood and work with people so they get this way of thinking in their life, early in life. We are right now doing such a study in Helsinki, which is doing this. And what we are doing, very simple. Parents and professionals very much want to interact in other people's life. And when the child is small, we are always there trying to change everything for child and do things in advance. What we tell the parents is, now let the child try him or herself to do this thing. We ask the parent to sit on their hands and not interfere. And you know what happens? These children develop better than other children because they have to think, what shall I do now? And only when they can't manage, that's when you go in. Because we usually interfere much, much too early. I have a grandchild nowadays and I see how they are doing with the child, my son and the wife. And I have decided, I sit on my hand, I say nothing about what I should say about what they should do, because they are this kind of, we call them purling parents, you know. They are there before anything happens, they are there and make it perfect before. So this child is just sitting there and doesn't learn very much. If I didn't know that this child is going to do well, I would stop, but I let him go. But, okay, I sit with a model that in fact is telling me that if you do this, you would get much further than anybody else in planning for life. But what is problematic is that we have another way of thinking about health in general, which makes it difficult for me to promote this idea in the world. I'm interested in what creates health, what things makes health. I'm not interested in what prevents disease and so on. I know that very well, and most people know very well about what prevents disease, but I'm interested in what creates health and how do you create health. And that's the important thing. If you always have that in mind, you go in the right direction. I always say, if you have two things in mind, what creates health, and the other thing is when you meet a person or a system you have to work with, you say, you have to be active participating subjects in this action. In fact, you have to think and find the answers as far as you can yourself. And the only thing I can do, if I'm an expert in something, I can come in and support you. But it's your problem, it's your scene, I will help you from my side, but it's you who have the problem and should solve the problem. And I shouldn't say, the problem, it's your life. What do you want to do with your life? It's a very provocative question. What do you want to do with life? Many times when I talk about quality of life, I say, well, how is your life? That's a very stressful question. How is your life really? And what do you want to do about your life? Where do you want to go? And people get very stressed. In fact, this is a question we always should have in mind. Okay, these are sort of starting remarks. I should talk something about health also. I'll take this picture away now if I can do it, clear image like this. Because what I'm talking about all the time, how have we started thinking about health? I'm not disrespectful of medicine, because what we have learned about health is in fact, I think, throughout mankind, the problem has been early that people died too early. This is a person falling out of life. And we were thinking about, why is this young person dying early? We had all kinds of explanation. Maybe it was the nature powers that did it. Maybe there was some monster or some spirit that came and took the life. Then for a long time we had religious explanations. God wanted you to come home early. What was it the Romans said? The ones that the gods loved will go early out of life, you know, that these kind of things. But we have this kind of thing until, let's say, the beginning of the 1800s, we started to get biological explanations. We started to get public health explanations for health. And then we started to think about. I'll put a sort of this is the rim you go over when you fall out of life. You know, this is sort of. Then we started thinking about how can we make people live better. And then we had medicine who came in, and medicine say, okay, we can treat you, and maybe you live a bit longer, and then it's okay. And for a long time, the medical model has been dominating this scene. Then, after a while, public health came in. This is where, you know, when in the 18th century people started moving into cities and got all these epidemics and so on. And we said, well, we can protect you from getting ill. We can find out ways of arranging society so you won't get ill. We give you clean water in when you drink the water. We think about food. We think about sanitation and so on. So we built this sort of protection system around this. It's very effective. It's actually, we as professionals know a lot about the things that could make life go wrong, and we try to protect people from that. It's a passive system in society. And building like this, we can start building a river also after this. You know, we go up the river and the river goes in this direction. This is protection. Then we have the next level, prevention. And what are we doing then? We are looking at people who have fallen into this river, floating here, and in prevention we try to do something so they will not drown. We lift them up from there. And a good suggestion would, of course, to say, okay, let's put a life jacket on you, a life jacket, so you can float in this water. And that is what prevention is a lot of that doing. All of these are trying to prevent death and disease and eliminate risks. You know, these are the sort of three keywords. Risks that can cause disease, that at the end can consequence that can cause, make you die too early. The next thing we did was to come in and say we want to teach you how to live your life. And they say, we want to teach you in this river where you are living, we want to make you swim in this river. So we want to teach you how to swim. And that is probably what most people who are in health education are thinking. I am the expert, I can train you, I can tell you how you should live your life, and then it will go okay. So health education has a strong sort of motive saying, we can teach you how to deal with this life. It's a good approach. But when you come to health promotion, you go one step further. And the step further is, as you say, it's your life, and you should learn how to swim yourself. It's not my job to teach you swim. You should learn how to swim, and maybe I can support you a little in this. And I have some ideas about how you could swim. Now I've been very short saying, protection, prevention, health education, and health promotion. But I've been doing this very quickly and so on. But in fact, I use this river many times for it's a good way to explain. The sound went, I don't know. It's a good way to explain the difference between curative, clinical practice, preventive, protective, health education, and health promotion. But all of a sudden, I learned that this is completely crazy. This is actually completely the wrong way to look at this. Because we are here building our knowledge of health on the basis of death and disease. We are building our image of health from death, disease, and risk approach. And I say, in fact, why should we do this? Shouldn't we actually look at life and look about what forces make you able to live? So in fact, I changed this picture completely. For me, this river today, you can remember this river, but I would draw you a new river, which is different. For me today, it's all about a big river that flows in this direction. I call this river the river of life, saying here you live, one day you come into life here, and then you float your way through life. You have good days and bad days, and one day you don't have the energy anymore to live, and then you fall out of life. This is your life course. I look at the river in the direction of life. Of course, throughout life, there's always a risk that you will fall out of life. Wherever you are in this river, you may fall out of life. So the risk is always there of going out of life. In fact, I don't know what will happen to me in the next second. Still, I try not to remember that. But if I, in fact, try to look at this direction, what actually makes it possible to live here instead of living, of looking at what what is sort of making me die. Of course, I think we have to know about this perspective here. We do, and we know a lot about it. But that should not be the dominating perspective of it all. And still, whenever I meet people who talk about health, this is the dominating. That is why your director here is saying that I don't know nothing about health, because he doesn't know about this little thing. And just think about your own life course. Of course you have been ill many times in your life, but it's actually an exception that you get ill. It happens usually over a short period of time in your life, and is a part of your integrated part of life. And in fact, this big thing is sort of more important than the detail down there. So in fact, this is what we should be looking at. We should look, instead of having vital statistics that look at how many people die of a cardiovascular disease, how many people die in traffic, how many, so we should actually look at what are the resources that would make life go on. For instance, if you look at Girona, I'm sure most of you can give from your special area all symptoms of going bad in that area. Let's think obesity, let's think about cardiovascular disease and so on. And it's important to know it. But can you actually give me resources of what makes it go well? And when Antonovsky started thinking in terms about salutogenesis, what generates health, instead of pathogenesis, his thought, you probably know this story, he made a study of, originally, of women halfway through life who went through menopause. And he was studying the effect of menopause of women. It's a life event with biological, psychological, social, and a lot of, and you also think about life because you can't produce children anymore as a woman. So it has a lot of implication for you, and it can cause a lot of stress. And what Antonovsky did, he took normal population and looked at the phenomena, interviewed people. And then he took groups of women who had been through extremely, extremely strong, stressful situation. Women who had lost their parents, women who had severe disease and survived. And one of the groups were also women who had survived the Nazi concentration camps in during the Second World War. And this last group was the one that actually raised the most sort of thoughts in us, because we knew very well, if you were a woman who had survived a concentration camp, you had difficulties with your mental health, really big difficulties. You had difficulty with keeping a job because you couldn't sort of keep together. You had difficulties with having a relationship. You actually destroyed many relationships because you were so bad. You had difficulties with mental health, and you even had problems, your children had problems because the mother was so sort of, shall I say, crazy that the child couldn't survive. We know it from other cases. A mother in mental bad condition has a child, usually many times a child that can survive. But when he did this study, he saw that some of these women, in fact, were leading a normal life. They had families, they had children, and everything was okay. And he said, even if this is not statistically an important result, you know, there was no good p-values for this group, it is the thing that even one of these persons can do and survive raises a different question. And the different question, however is it possible to live a normal life after this? And that's when the salutogenesis started. How can you actually live and survive when you have gone through this kind of situation? And he started to study this study. The first thing he did was to make an interview of these women, and then he made a qualitative study and made a questionnaire out of these studies, and came out with this his brave new word. I think I should give you a discussion back on the concept of health. Because now I said, there is something different. I once had the opportunity to talk to one of the most important persons in health promotion and public health. This is the man who stands here. His name is Halfdan Mahler. And if you have been in public health or health promotion, you know this person. He was the one who initiated, first of all, the Alma-Ata discussion with the WHO, UNICEF, where WHO said we need to improve primary health care and not hospital care. That was the idea many years ago, almost 30 years ago. The second thing he did was he introduced the international global health policy, health for all policies, with certain ideas. And he initiated the Ottawa Charter and also health promotion in 1986. He was at the Nordic School, where I worked, and I still am a professor, and held a speech about the role of public health training in health. And he was the first person I ever heard who spoke about quality of life within public health. I was there, and they asked me to interview important persons. So I was there with a microphone and interviewing him. And now you know probably WHO's old definition of health. Health is not only the absence of disease, but the state of complete well-being in physical, social, and mental dimensions. And now this guy talks about quality of life. He was also one of the persons who were around in after the Second World War when they initiated the concept of health. WHO did it. So he had this long experience. He had done a fantastic work for health, public health and health promotion. And he talked about quality of life. Now, I was doing research on quality of life. So, of course, when I interviewed him, I asked him the question about quality of life. What do you mean by saying quality of life? And if you listen to him now, I let him talk. And I would like you to think, what does he really say? Has he changed over, this is 1987, when WHO was 40 years old in principle. Has he changed his mind over 40 years? I let this movie go, and I hope you can follow and hear what he's saying. The other person there, I don't know who that is. But, yeah.
Dr. Halfdan Mahler, you are the Director General of the World Health Organization. And I was very happy to hear you too. When you started, you didn't mention the word health. You were talking about the quality of life. And I'm curious, how do you define the word quality of life? Well, let me take one of the founders of WHO, who drafted the definition of health as
Should I?
Yeah. And it adds.
You have problems with the translation. I can do this. I know what he's saying, so I can, in principle, take the sound off and tell you what he's saying in English, so you can hear and translate. So I take it back from the beginning. This is good education. You start from the beginning again. I take the sound low down a bit. Okay, now I went too far. This is what happens when... Okay. Dr. Halfdan Mahler, you're the director of the World Health Organization, and when you talked today, you mentioned the word quality of life. And I wonder, how do you define quality of life? And then he says, let me take one of the founders of WHO who made the definition of health as a physical, social, and spiritual well-being. And he said, the absolute level, you know, the absolute level of health. It's a sort of, you have a full score. And he said, stupid, do you remember when I went in the war and we were occupied and we went out in the evening and you didn't know if you were coming back? That is when I had the highest quality of life, because physically I was ready to sacrifice my life. Socially,
I knew I was surrounded by friends,
and if I didn't come back, somebody would take care of my family. Mentally, and spiritually, mentally, I was in total well-being, because I could make this decision.
So even when
you are faced with death,
you go out
and you don't know if you're coming back, you still have the highest quality of life. And saying this, he says, quality of life is difficult to define. It is
it's
a spiritual dimension of health.
Because it's something that has not necessarily to do with whether you are.
It doesn't have to do whether with if you are physically well.
An invalid, you can still be mentally.
You can be an invalid, but still be a super human being.
Life
can be wonderful in spite of this.
So for me, the important thing with quality of life is never to believe that it is only whether you're...
And the important thing about quality of life, it's not only about the function of the body,
that you socially are functioning
well, or socially functioning
and that you're spiritually are
and spiritually are functioning well.
These are the three
dimensions are part of the quality of life division.
Physical
well-being,
social well-being,
and spiritual well-being.
And
that's how he would define this. And then he says, if you get to the highest level of this,
you can still be ill.
You can be ill
and
have that kind of okay, feeling. Okay, so this is what he said. Okay.
Stop.
We don't let her go now. If you think about what he is saying, now it's probably a bit difficult to analyze because I give it, you can't hear the original. I was shocked when I was standing there. I was interviewing the most important person in health in the whole world. And he starts his story about war. When there's war, I have the highest quality of life. That's what I heard when I stood with the microphone. And I could have killed him for that, almost. Because if you read about health and the world, the first thing, the first prerequisite for health is peace on earth. So how come the highest priest of health and health promotion stands and says, war is the best situation when life is more wonderful? And that's what my first impression of what he said. But in fact what he said, when life has a meaning, when life is meaningful, then I have a good quality of life. He said, in that situation, when my life is threatened, and I'm able to take a decision that actually could take me out of this world, I can do a meaningful thing, and that's when I have a good quality of life. So this sort of health and creation of meaning is an important thing if you go into the quality of life dimension. Now I guess that all of you have some idea about, about health promotion, what it's all about. I usually joke about this. Let's see if I can find this one. Let's not start with this one. That's the health promotion definition, but let's do it like this. There's a code in the Ottawa Charter saying health promotion is the process enabling people to gain control over their health determinants, thereby improving their health and enabling them to live an active and productive life. Yes, this is the genetic code of health promotion. I do this as a joke because many of the people I work with in my place in Helsinki, my research center, are geneticians. So I say, you work with genetic codes, and this is the genetic code of health promotion. the problem, of course, is if you have a genetic code and you can't translate it, it means nothing. And this has been one of the big problems with health promotion. We haven't been able to translate this. So I say, okay, I work with pictures. Let's see now, that's the one I started with, this one. Let's make a picture of it, because a picture is much stronger than words. You can learn more from a picture. And so let's do a picture of it. What is self-promotion? What do you want? A nice background? We can put a red background on this one. It's nicer like that. And then we can make this person here. Okay. Health promotion is a process. It's a process in life. Let's say, okay, life starts there and then it goes on and goes on and on. And a person here is on the way through life like this. Now, the pictures doesn't come really nice on this drawing machine. Health promotion is a process. And the important word first here is process. Because a process is something that goes on and goes on, goes on as long as you are here in life, the process goes on like this. And it's directed. Health promotion is a process. Enabling people to gain control over their health determinants. What is that? There are factors, maybe genetic, maybe social, maybe economic, maybe culture, maybe traditional, that steer your life when you start life. So these factors are there, and you have them with you when you start life. It's part of you. And these are, each one of us have been starting life with these kind of sort of factors that we have on the back of ourselves when we continue life. And the next thing is that when you go through life, you learn, you have positive and negative experiences, you go in school and so on, and this is also your life experiences are also part of what you have as resources for your life. So these also go into your story, like this. Oh, we have it. And then, looking at prospectively in the front of you, you will encounter different phenomena. We can call them health problems, we can call them whatever life events or things that happen, different events. And you have to deal with them. And what you do in this space, health promotion, the process which enabling for you to gain control over your health determinant. The thing is that you should be able, when you encounter some event in life, to use these things to get forward. You have this sort of loop of thinking. And maybe you solve the problem, yes, and we think everything is good. That is what we always want people to solve a problem, and then things are okay. That is sort of, we think that is important. But you may also not solve the problem. And both of these experiences go back to you. And it's easy to think, if you solve a problem, things are okay. But if you get a problem and you don't solve it, you say, that is not okay. But in fact, not being able to solve a problem and taking the experience into account may mean that next time you have a similar problem, because you have failed once, you can think about, why did I fail? You can go back and think like this. And then this time you maybe make it. And all the time doing these things, you are sort of learning and increasing your competence, your repertoire for solving health problems. All the time, both if you have negative and positive experience, all this, if you use this experience in the right way, then you can continue and be better and better at this thing. Now I have drawn one person in the middle of the picture. I shall tell this person represents mankind and mankind in an environment, in the setting where things happen. So it's not only talking about the individual, but also about the environment. I should actually draw something on the T-shirt of this person. And this would be two letters, human rights. Human rights. And why do I say human rights? Yes. What is a human being? A human being is an active, participating person in its own life. Active, participating subject. And when I, as I said when I started about children, and when I work with people and I work with settings, I have to think about, it's your problem. You are the one, the active participating subject in this situation. Okay. Health promotion is the process enabling people to gain control over their health determinants in order to improve their health. You improve your health if you can do this. And doing this, you are able to lead an active and productive life. Active, productive life. And what is an active, productive life? This is WHO word. Active, productive life. I would use another word. What do you want with your life? I looked at you and you looked at me earlier. What do you really want to do with your life? I can give you an easy answer. I think you want to have a good life. You want to enjoy life, you want to have a good life in all its dimensions. That's a classic answer. Very easy. Next time I ask you, say, I want a good life. Whatever that is, because it's only you who can say what your good life is. And good life is the classic Greek philosopher said good life is the same term as quality of life. In fact, you want to have quality in your life. That's all. So, if I translate the genetic code, the purpose of everything we do with health is to create good conditions for life and good quality of life. That's why I draw this river aiming at life. Life is actually the important question, not the other, death and disease. It's part of life. You can, of course, die early, but in fact, focus your life. If you focus and orientate your life towards life and what makes life good, you will definitely have a better life. And this is what Antonovsky, when we look at what we have done, while I could draw this triangle, I took it away. You remember, I drew a triangle like that in the beginning and said, if you act in this way, you can live longer, you can have a good quality of life, and you actually start to choose positive health behavior, and you can encounter stress and disease easier. And we look at the whole research in this area, in the whole world, from Antonovsky until today. The evidence speaks that this is the evidence of the salutogenesis. But it's so different in thinking that health promoters have difficulties to do this, because health promoters are usually trained as health educators, and their main theme is to prevent disease, protect the human being, and build systems. It's okay, you should do that. But you should do this in addition also, and then you will get even better results. Let me give you an example, if I am now at the right point. The picture is not very good, but let me explain to you. This is a girl I know very well. When this film was made, she was 18 years old, and she is telling her story. She will talk in Swedish. I will explain to you what she's saying. It's an abbreviation of a longer film. Let her go. I was born with without arms and just one leg and then a little small leg. That leg goes only to my knee.
Men höger ben, det är helt normalt. Det var många som trodde att
Well, when I was born, many thought that it was a medicine that had made this. I don't know if you remember Neurosedyn, which created this kind of problems. But her mother never took any drugs, so it can't be that. It could be environment, conditions and so on. It could be a mutation and so on. It's not actually too uncommon to have this kind of problems in smaller.
Well,
I grew up as any other child. My parents treated me as my brother. And I think this is very important, how people treat me, although I have this handicap. If they think I can do something, So I could, in fact, I went to an ordinary school. I was taught in the ordinary way. And I remember when I was small, a physiotherapist tried to teach me how to walk. And we were trying for a full year and nothing happened. And then one day I said, couldn't we do it like this? And since then I have been able to walk. And that's one thing that comes again and again in my life. My mother often tries to teach me how to do things, but it's always me, myself, who decides. Can you see the picture at all? It's you know, it's very weak. I will give a comment. This is a teenager, a girl. Of course, as a teenager, she wants to make herself pretty, use cosmetica, and do the things that everybody else is doing. I live in a flat of my own in the center of the city, and I make my own food, I cook my own food, and I make my own dishes and washes and so on. The only help I have is that chair behind Lena Maria and a stick to put underwear on. Well, it would of course be good to have arms, because then I could do two stitches at the same time. But on the other hand, I was born like this. I wouldn't like to change with anybody. This is me, and I'm here. I'm happy to be what I am. And when I was 18 years old, I got my driver's license, and it's wonderful to have a car. I can go anywhere and move around, and it's fun. It's really good. I really need it. Otherwise, I would have much more difficulties to move, or always being dependent on other people, and I don't want to be dependent on other people. You have seen a short sequence of the life of a young girl, and I have told you the story of her life as much as I know. Now I am asking you a question. You can talk with the people who sit next to you. How come why is she doing so well? Can you give me an explanation? She says, I had an ordinary childhood, I went to ordinary school, and so on and so on. But can you give me an explanation? Is it dependent on her? Is it the family? Or is it the society? Or is it the whole? Can you give me a good explanation? Try to figure out. So talk. I don't know if you know each other, but blah, blah, blah. I'll give you a few minutes to think about this. How come she managed? Okay, do you have any idea? I throw you a case in your face and I ask you the important, what makes her tick, what makes her go? What do you think? Do you have any idea of this? You just can talk freely. We give you the microphone. just suggest something to me. Whoever. Yes.
We're talking about there are many things to utilize in the world of a young woman. So she was able to recognize herself as a human being, with all the positives that a person has. In other way, we think that family would have her to learn to replay her own parameters. Then the society. We're talking about what has happened with the silver mining in Africa, inside of Finland. And we said, could be she would be able to live with the sources that she has in Africa.
Yeah.
We were thinking that it's a form a global, la unión de muchos elementos diferentes con una actitud de base positiva.
It's pretty interesting what you say about Africa. We know from pediatrics that children with cerebral palsy, you know, that who are born with damage, actually do physically do better in Africa and Latin America than in Europe, because they are always with their family and they learn how to move. But you are exactly right. Society is an important part of this. I think part of the explanation is she is born in a society which is a welfare society, which says everybody has an opportunity to lead a good life in a welfare society. This is Sweden, and I think that's part of the answer. It's not only a question about her. Do you have also this?
Professor Livingston, Sir Jeremy Curado.
Can't get this right.
No, I don't know. Yeah, algunas de las peces que faltaban en el curso, pues me voy a hablar. Penso en quan nosaltres veiem una persona gran i diguem, jo no vull arribar a aquesta edat, en aquesta qualitat de vida, perquè estan en una cadira de rodes o perquè depenen d'una altra per viure. Però és que realment nosaltres no sabem què pensen ells i com realment viuen aquesta qualitat de vida. I bé, per altra banda, penso en el cas que té el poble de la diabetes, la diabetes. En el tipus 1, nosaltres ens representa una cosa molt espectacular, un nen s'ha de fer a pujar 5 vegades. I en canvi, quan debuta un adult amb 60 anys, ens sembla que no és res, quan en realitat és molt més greu a la seva vivència en un adult amb 60 anys, perquè té una perspectiva de curta de vida i acostumat a un altre estil de vida, que no un nen que sempre ha conegut allò i s'ha anat a mirar d'això. Moltes gràcies per la seva...
Thank you. I couldn't follow all of it, but could you just give me the core words? I understand some Spanish, so I understand part of what you said, but I can't get the whole answer. Is there anybody who is fluent enough to give a summary? I thank you. But what I understood, I think I understood the dimension of giving the impression of what this is all about through this person. Yeah.
He was trying to say that we know human beings can adapt to illness.
Yeah.
And he said that it was easier for children because they had a lot of something before
they are able to learn.
Yeah.
But that's happened when you are grown older, and the mind is in the chair, without any perspective to move for yourself. So what happens if you are a diabetic, starting about 60 years old? He says, it's not the same because getting to do other things, it's difficult.
That is a very good comment, because she is born like this, and she has all, her life is like this. And if we, when we were professionals, for instance, me as a pediatrician, when I meet a child who is born with a disability, if I treat that child as a child, if the parents treat the child as a child, you have a different. But usually the problem is that we as professionals say, well, there's something wrong. We define this person as sick, and the parents define this as sick. Antonovsky loved this story. There's a wonderful story about what you were saying about this this 60-year-old person getting this. Of course, it's different. But if you have the ability to, in that situation, to adapt to that situation. Antonovsky loved this story. There's a story about a man, 40 years old, with family. He was an engineer. He was doing well. He was singing also in a choir and so. He was doing well with life. And at the age of 40, his retina went away, and he went completely blind over one day. And what happened was that after that, everybody said, it's the blind man. It's the blind man. And they forgot the salutogenic question. He has a lot of resources. And if they, instead of defining him as the blind man, they would say, well, here you have a man, he's 40 years old. He looks quite attractive. He's very nice with his wife. And he's taking care of his children also. And in fact, he's good at work. He's a good engineer. He's fully competent. He has one problem. He has shortage of seeing. But we always say, it's the blind one, it's the crooked one, it's so on. So we don't learn. And this is exactly what Antonovsky said. You should actually look at what are the resources of a person, what are the resources of a system, and then things are right. I think we have gone over time now, almost. Or are we complete? Did we plan to stop at this minute? So I know one thing you should never do as a lecturer, you should never go over time. Now I have gone a few minutes over time, and I can tell you, to your disappointment, you will never get these minutes back. I've stolen them from your life. I'm sorry, and thank you for listening. Thank you for listening. If you have any questions, you can turn to me. If you want to see what we know about the salutogenesis, I have avoided to use all technical terms. You can go in on this website. I think maybe you have the pamphlet, maybe you have it there. www.salutogenesis.fe. You can go in and look what we have done in this area. We have in fact booked all the material we have been published. We are still building this up. But this is a basis where you can actually go look. It's now built as a research database, but in the future it will be more for the practitioners. And my mission, from research side, I stand so strong today, so my mission is today to change the mind of the system. And it's a big challenge. But sometimes you do it, sometimes not. And if you don't succeed one day, you have to think, what could I do better? So after this lecture, I will go home and say, what could I have done better in this context? Well, thank you. Okay. If you want to ask questions, you have time. It's okay for me, but it's no.
Professor,
sense of all levels are. Com a últim comentari, seria paper amb xic l'ús de la Balló. La meva sogra ha mort amb 5 anys. I em vaig sentir una persona abans que morís. I oi, potser jo no volia viure tant en aquestes condicions. I la meva contesta va ser, potser ella sí volia viure en aquestes condicions.
Could you translate, because this one doesn't work, yes. Yeah, but it doesn't work, you know. Just give me a shot.
Number two.
Two.
El dos per ell.
I get nothing. Let's see. It doesn't work, this one. Yeah.
This one.
Yeah. It's not going. Ah, my problem. Excuse me. Okay, now I have a lot of sun. I can hear you now. Yeah. Could you just give me a short comment on what you... Yeah. It is actually a very good question. When you work with quality of life, I many times get that question. My grandmother, she's blind. She's lying in bed. She's doing nothing. Her life is worth nothing, they say. And I say, well, for you as an outsider, it's perhaps worth nothing. But the difficult thing is, we never know. And I see people with dementia who seem to be completely out of this world, and we say, they are nothing. And I say, you never know. If you think like the first thought, they are nothing, then you are like a Nazi. Then you think that I can kill that person, it's worth nothing. Yeah. I think this is really a good question, again. You never know, you never know. And the other thing is, what I always say, wherever you, whatever happens in life, try to find a solution, a good solution for yourself in this situation. And that is a salutogenic way of thinking. There's always a possibility, you have to find it. Okay. Any other? You are so...
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. It has been good. Thank you.